Angelo Cherby, Fred from Radio. We are still in Berlin, and we are here with Gareth Ellis-Unwin. Hello, Gareth.
Good afternoon.
Gareth, you are a producer and of many movies, big ones too, and you are here because you were one of the panelists at the EFM for the panel Producers Today, The Joys and Challenges of Alternative Distributions. Which are the joys of that?
that's a fairly short list, Angelo. No, I think, you know, we're in a really interesting time with filmed content distribution, and the panel yesterday had some really good speakers. There was a gentleman from ViewStar, one of the VOD platforms, and he was talking about content that was working particularly well for them at the moment. There was a Latin American lady who looked after both production and distribution and sales for the LATAM territory, a very inspiring lady who's been producing documentary films for 20, 25 years and looking at the slightly more unique sort of access to the market for documentary output. And then Olivier Camphor, who I know from the UK, who has just completed his first feature where they looked at a direct distribution model. And so it was good. It was lively. It was there was a lot to discuss. I think that those attending the panel were suitably inspired by some of the stories that we were sharing. It was a good session.
Which is, on your opinion, being a producer and the main novelty of online distribution that can change the world of distribution as we know it?
Well, I mean, I was talking about my last film as a direct case study. So Kajaki, The True Story, was a film that was quite low wattage in terms of the name of the director, and also we deliberately cast unknowns because we wanted to give the film this real integrity, and it's a British military story. We want the guys to look and feel and walk and talk like real soldiers, so everything had been designed to have this sort of feeling but didn't necessarily have direct instantaneous commercial appeal. So one of the things that I needed to do was to find a way within our own ownership that we would be able to find a way of getting that filmed content into either theatres or online or into home entertainment. And whilst the uniqueness of the film was that we did a lot of it in a direct relationship with the exhibitors and the distributors for home ent, etc., it was quite a sort of traditional way of doing things. The only thing that was different was that we didn't have a sales agent or a distributor sitting between us and the exhibitors. And I think, you know, going back to your first question about what was the joys, well, the joys was ownership. You know, we genuinely owned those relationships, and it gave me opportunity to see how, you know, some of the issues that are facing the exhibitors have a direct influence on the films that we're trying to get made and marketed and distributed at the moment. So that was the big benefit. I had a very direct relationship with each of the cinemas. I think for different shows it's slightly different, and for some of the material, and this was something that we established yesterday on the panel, that it's the producer's responsibility to know and understand not only the material that they're working with, but also a sense of its commercial life. And although it's very seductive to try and go for that big showcase opening and to have the theatrical release and get to walk the red carpet, sometimes that's not the best means by which to get that story out there into the public domain. And, you know, the guy from ViewStar was talking on the fact that a lot of the content that works really well for them is the slightly geekier, slightly sort of edgier, sort of fanboy type material that, you know, in some ways is done on a massive scale with Marvel as a studio and things like that, but also the subculture of graphic novels and those sort of things really worked well for his platform. It was interesting to hear the other stories and also field some of the questions from the audience about direct distribution or alternative distribution. You know, I think one of the things we also established quite early on is that these aren't naughty terms. terms. These shouldn't be sort of seen as swear words or bad language. It's,
right,
opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be that that opportunity is more suited to something that doesn't necessarily have the commercial appeal that a film with stars and from a known director might necessarily have.
Yeah. But do you think that the approach that producers have to do toward have towards this new mean is correct as it is nowadays, or you as producers, not yourself, should change completely your approach?
Well, I think, I mean, firstly, let's take it back one step, and, you know, there are a lot of producers that aren't even current with how films are made commercially, financed commercially, or released commercially. Even now, you know, something that I often hear is people coming to me and sending ideas to our company and saying, well, I'm a creative producer. You know, what does that mean? You know how to talk to the director, you can do some script notes, you can comment on whether the script is working or not, but I believe that every producer should at least be current with the market as exists, let alone trying to get the jump on what that new wave might be. So I always try and petition people to sort of really embrace the commercial side of making film, because ultimately, you know, unless you can solely finance through soft money sources alone, or you have rich enough parents that are just going to give you the money to go and make that movie, it has to have a market sensibility. You have to understand how you're going to get an audience to come out to see that project on whichever platform you're working with. I mean, where I think things are very interesting in the new space at the moment, and you probably are current enough with a number of the trades are looking at Netflix and those types of platforms, where the concern is that the SVOD window is going to in some weird way collapse within an all rights deal, and I think it is a bit of a danger. We already have it with international sales, so quite often in the financing of the film you're going to have to sell off certain key territories because you know that you're going to need those pre-sales to be able to get up to your budget to go and shoot the movie. So it's always like you're taking the prime cuts off the carcass anyway. So then to not only have taken those prime cuts off the carcass, but then say of what is remaining, that there only are certain exploitations within what's left to afford to other salesmen, is you're starting to really complicate the exploitation of a property and how that might get sold. I mean, I think within the sort of standard traditional form where SVOD sits in about the third or fourth window, and historically will have a modest but acceptable value against it. You know, now that Netflix are saying, well, actually, we'll cut you a check that's equivalent to a pay TV deal or a free TV deal, but we have to go earlier, our window has to come earlier, and that then unpicks what you might be doing with your home ent deal. It might even completely debase the opportunity of doing a theatrical release at all. You know, it would be a very brave distributor that took something into the cinemas that's been readily available on Netflix for 2-3 months before they can take it out to a theatrical release. I mean, it just, you know, the common sense would say, well, people have had the opportunity to sit at home and watch this for the last 3 months. What's going to drive them to engage with the opportunity to go and see it in the theatrical space at the cost that it comes at a time we know that cinema audiences are dwindling anyway? So I think it's an interesting evolution, but just like every evolution that we've faced in the 110 years of making films, we need to treat it as what it is, which is an evolutionary step, but within the construct of an industry that's been around for a very long time.
You were talking about Netflix, or let's talk about iTunes or those kind of platforms. But if you do a direct distribution, you can avoid the middleman, basically, isn't
it? Well, one of the main reasons that we did our film this way round was firstly, was just an understanding of the lack of commercial appeal. So that is what it is, and you get past that. I think a lot of good films are made that don't necessarily stack up on the commercial appeal side of things. But what was very important was we had established that our potential audience were the sort of people in the UK that contribute to Help for Heroes, that buy a poppy in November, that buy a wristband from a collector in the street. And through doing some research into that, we established that there was this very large motivated group that was likely to come out in support of the film. Now, to try and access them, we had to go one of two ways. One which would have cost a lot of money and take a lot of time, which is to be very broad, you know, big paid ads, you know, TV spots, you know, and regular, just regular, the regular way of doing it, and hope to try and hit that sweet spot of, I don't know, say 3.5 to 5% of the British audience, British public that contribute to military charities. Or we could work with military charities, that would mean that every message that went out through those channels or the social media that approached those channels was more focused and targeted. And so I started to have a conversation with each of the charities, and I'm sure it's the same in whichever territory that your listeners are from, but there is a commercial handshake with a charity where you say, okay, we want to work with you, we want to have access to your supporters, we want to use your branding, we want to go out on your newsletters, but the handshake is, well, what's it going to mean to me as the charity? And so trying to identify a potential return to the charity within a more traditional model was very complex. I mean, it's difficult enough for me to understand as a producer that earns his money from it, but when you start talking about, okay, you have a UK box office and there's a 50-50 split between the exhibitor and the distributor, because the deal was set up with the sales agent takes their commission, and then the distributor takes their commission, and of the pound that goes into the British box office, the producer might actually only get 35 to 40 pence of what's left, and that's going to be shared again with the actors' unions and other, and you start to get this sense of a dilution, which is a very complex waterfall. Now, we're used to working with that, but the charities would look at that and go, well, hang on a minute, what, you know, so you're telling me that I'm going to get a pence of a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of a percentage? And what I was able to do by doing the direct deal with the exhibitors, I was able to say, okay, every pound that comes through the door at the cinemas, it's a 50-50 split between us and the exhibitors, and of that 50 split, once we've got the production cost back, you have a profit line, and it's in that, conventionally we would call it adjusted gross. That's where you now sit. So instead of being position 6 or 7 on the waterfall, you're actually going to be in a joint second position with us. And that gave them enough encouragement to join the film. And one of the things I'm most proud, apart from the quality of the film and the great reviews, and, you know, people have really embraced it, even here at our first international market, it gives me a lot of satisfaction to know that I've slightly bent or adjusted the normal traditional way of working to do the right thing by the charities. And, you know, that will hopefully create a revenue stream for them throughout the whole life of the film, through the next, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7 years or whatever it might be. And that's been really exciting for me.
One last question. As a producer, which is the advantage on the revenue side for you to do VOD distribution in terms of that regular theatrical, like normal, let's call it.
Yeah.
Normal
traditional.
Traditional, yeah.
So, I mean, by going through a self-distribution means, you're excluding two significant commissions. Basically, you're excluding the sales agent and you're excluding the distributor. And then, irrespective of whether it's VOD, whether it's theatrical, whether it's SVOD, whether it's home end, whatever those revenue streams are, you sit in a higher position. So firstly, your likelihood of seeing revenue is much enhanced. Secondly, you have a clearer position, which is then easier to attract equity finance. You know, a lot of people that have previously invested in films have been burnt because they sit so far down that recoupment schedule. When you give them a new opportunity and say, okay, well, you know, after the either the grocer, if it's home end, or after the platform, whether it's VOD or SVOD, directly after those two people, you sit shoulder to shoulder to me, you know, and it's really easy and transparent in terms of the reporting. It's very easy to then understand that, okay, with every iTunes download, our share is, I mean, in the UK it's about £1.90 for a standard definition download, and that just, the clarity that gives your potential partners is really reassuring for them. And then, you know, it's just the simple fact of if you were paying a sales agent and a distributor, you would probably see somewhere between 45 and 60% of the gross value of what is arriving with them diluted before it reaches you. These are, you know, really significant commissions.
So it's a really significant difference.
Yes, yeah. Well, now, where it doesn't work, and I was very careful to point this out on the panel yesterday, where it doesn't work is if you are going to need either the experience or the financial influence of a distributor or a sales agent. You know, if you're working with a sales agent which are going to give you great sales estimates and be able to give you that market insight to know how to commercially sell your film, or if you're a distributor, even if it's just in your home territory, that says, okay, we have an MG of this amount of money and we're going to promise that we're going to put so much to your P&A, it might be that the financial weight that they bring makes a direct relationship a nonsense. You know, why would you necessarily try and do it on your own if you've got a great distributor with all that knowledge who's prepared to put up a lot of their own money in getting your film out there? So I always petition the fact that firstly you should always treat it on a case by case basis. It's a project by project basis, the analysis. Know your material inside out, have an understanding of who your target audience is, and are you either going to need the insight, experience, or the financial support of a distributor or sales agent to reach them? If you are, then you need to cozy up with those. But and if the case is that you don't, and you believe that you can reach the audience by clever means and put yourself in that higher position, then it can be really, really fulfilling and really rewarding, not just financially, but also just the knowledge. I mean, for example, we had one event in one of the cinemas in south of England where I think it's a 240-seat auditorium, and we got 60 people to come out because we were doing a Q&A. And the cinema managers were so happy. They were like, for a Sunday afternoon, 60 people in the cinema, this is brilliant. And I was looking at it and going, but it's only 25% full. It's, you know, I thought that we should have the whole thing full. So it was that was also really insightful, really interesting to discover.
Well, thanks a lot, Gareth. It will be very enlightening, your interview. Thanks a lot for having been with us. It was Angelo Cerbi for Fred Film Radio from the Berlinale Film Festival.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.